Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Joel Gerke of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. We should point out at the outset that we are recording prior to the start of the Hillary Clinton testimony before the Benghazi committee. So if anything remarkable happens there, Jim and I will cover that on Friday. Joel, good to have you with us again.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let's start with the good. And this could be interpreted in a number of different ways. Some, of course, were hoping Joe Biden would run for president because beyond anything else, they want to make sure Hillary Clinton does not become the next president. But yesterday at the Rose Garden, the vice president made it official.
As my family and I have worked through the grieving process, I've said all along what I've said time and again to others, that it may very well be that that process, by the time we get through it, closes the window on mounting a realistic campaign for president, that it might close. I've concluded it has closed.
So Biden is out. Jim has said many times he thinks Biden is actually a tougher opponent for Republicans because he doesn't have the scandal baggage. He obviously is quirky and will say a lot of crazy things from time to time, but he comes across as more authentic to many people than Hillary Clinton. At the same time, Joel, while that could be considered good news, there's also the point that he did not in any way endorse Hillary Clinton. In fact, he made it very clear that he did not see Republicans as his enemy, as Hillary Clinton intimated at the end of the first Democratic debate, almost rebuking her in that fashion. So while Hillary Clinton has a much easier path to the nomination, there's still not a lot of love between the current occupants of the White House and her.
I think that first of all, we should take a moment of silence for reporters who are assigned to covering the Democratic presidential campaign, because that just got a lot more boring, for one thing. And the other thing is, they're not going to be able to get their stuff on TV because producers are going to revert to the Donald Trump, you know, wall-to-wall coverage. So life just got a lot harder for them. Like you said about him taking that shot at Hillary, that's what's so weird about this to me. It's not that surprising that he didn't run. It is surprising that he didn't run after days of escalating his rhetoric with respect to hitting Hillary, both on that enemy line that he said yesterday. That was the third or fourth time he'd done that in the last few days. And if he didn't know the first time that was going to be taken as a shot at Hillary, it got a lot of attention that way. And with the Osama bin Laden stuff, the way he talked about how he knew more about bin Laden than even major cabinet officials did, and he was actually for it. I mean, they were setting up what looked like it was going to be a war, and then he came out and announced he was out.
Yeah, very odd. And not only a moment of silence for reporters who don't get to cover a more interesting Democratic campaign, a moment of silence for reporters who got the story wrong. All those people quoting anonymous sources earlier in the week being absolutely certain that Joe Biden was going to run. Egg on the face more on the reporters, because the anonymous sources are still anonymous.
I was sort of watching a similar thing play out on not to jump the shark here on the Paul Ryan stuff, where you have one congressman told me that he had spoken with two friends of his, and one said, "I just talked to Paul Ryan and he's in tonight," and the other said, "I just talked to Paul Ryan and he's out tomorrow." And it's like that's just what happens in these kind of stories.
It's hard to know until somebody actually makes a statement. So now we actually know what Biden's doing, and Friday, of course, is the deadline for Paul Ryan. We'll get to that in the third martini. But on to the bad martini now, and it was already bad enough news for John Brennan, the CIA director, that a self-described teenage stoner hacked into his AOL account. The CIA director actually has a personal AOL account, which tells you how up to speed he is when it comes to cybersecurity and the latest technological marvels of our world. But in addition to that, WikiLeaks has also hacked into this AOL account and posted unredacted documents, which apparently were not classified, but do contain the home phone number, home address for our CIA director, and also that for his children and other relatives. Obviously, could be a gold mine of information, particularly for people who wish to do harm to one of our senior officials and his loved ones. Horrible, horrible developments again from WikiLeaks, which has been nothing but trouble. And once again, people who you would expect to be on the cutting edge of keeping relatively important information safe, like the CIA director, not doing a very good job of covering his tracks and leaving that kind of stuff off of his personal accounts.
That's exactly right. And you kind of hit on both the substantive and the symbolic part of this. I was talking to a Senate aide who works on cyber issues, and even when we thought it was just a teenage hacker who was being an idiot, at a minimum, the takeaway is that it's insane. This guy said that it's just amazing that our top spy has no idea how to protect his own emails, but is in charge of protecting the info of the entire federal government.
Right.
The other thing is you had Josh Earnest in the White House press briefing getting grilled on cybersecurity issues, and he actually said that this is not a particularly significant or worrisome event that happened over the weekend. Now, I don't think he knew about WikiLeaks, but the idea that the CIA director gets hacked and our answer is, don't worry, this isn't a big deal. If you didn't know why that was a crazy thing for him to say, we found out immediately when WikiLeaks said they'd done it too and they were releasing his info.
It looks like he did a much better job than Hillary of not putting critical classified material on his home email account, and it certainly doesn't appear that he had his own homebrew server going on, so there's definitely a difference between the two stories.
I mean, even that is sort of overstated, though, in the sense, so there's lots of information that you could have. I've had Intel people explain this to me a few different ways. It's, in the context of the Hillary stuff, there's a lot of info you could have that if you've got 10 sticky notes, for instance, and each one says a different thing, like you're meeting with this scientist, and then you're going to travel to that part of the country, and then you're going to study up on any one of those sticky notes might not be classified. But if a foreign spy gets all 10 of them, then you got a classified document that could be telling you any number of scary things. We've got entire departments of intelligence services, and all they do is study open source information, stuff you can find on Google, and they piece stuff together. And so what if hypothetically John Brennan's got an email in there, he's got metadata on his emails showing where he was traveling, and where he's traveling isn't a big deal until you realize that some other top Intel guy was also traveling there, and neither one of those things are classified on their own until you put them together. Now you've got classified information that's giving people insights that they should not have. Things like this are never a good thing.
And once again, WikiLeaks proving itself to be a great harm to freedom and protecting free societies. On to the crazy martini now. And this martini is actually getting a little less crazy, it would appear, based on what happened last night. But it'd be interesting to see how the results are interpreted. The big question yesterday is, would the House Freedom Caucus endorse Paul Ryan for speaker? The official answer is no. 80% is the threshold for an endorsement from the Freedom Caucus. And 80% did not endorse Paul Ryan, so there's not an official endorsement. However, Raul Labrador, who is a member of the House Freedom Caucus, says a supermajority, at least two-thirds of the House Freedom Caucus, will in fact endorse and vote for Paul Ryan. So while there's not an official endorsement, he's got the votes of the bulk of the Freedom Caucus. And the question now, of course, Joel, is whether that's good enough for Paul Ryan.
Yeah, and it sounds like he's taking it and running with it. He said something about being honored to receive that kind of support from them. I believe the quote was, "I believe this is a positive step toward a unified Republican team." So sounds like he's not going to stand on the details there. They didn't get to, they have an 80% threshold to take an official position. I was told last night by one of the members that they got to probably 70%. He emphasized that that's, a lot of movement in just 2 days. And then another one emphasized that this 80% threshold wasn't designed for this kind of problem. And so don't worry about that very much. It's a good story if you were worried about the Republicans being able to pick a speaker. There are a lot of people who, even in the Freedom Caucus last night, they were kind of explaining a bit of how that conversation went down when they had their closed door meeting. And they talked about how they don't know who else could be speaker. They don't know who could get 218 on the House floor. They know that the guy who they endorsed, Daniel Webster, really had no shot, even though they respect him a lot and they like him a lot. This sort of gets them off the hook for what would have been otherwise a bruising and perhaps even productive, but they might have chosen a great alternative to Paul Ryan at the end of the day, but the House GOP conference was in for a bruising fight.
So assuming that this goes forward and the leadership election is next Wednesday and then a speaker vote, I would assume, shortly following that. Joel, right after that, assuming Ryan gets the job, he's got a debt ceiling to deal with. He's got a continuing resolution to deal with that is going to be controversial over funding for the immigration program and possibly Planned Parenthood coming back around. So how short of a honeymoon, how long of a honeymoon do you expect him to get here?
I suspect it'll be kind of short. I don't, you know, it's not clear how the debt ceiling thing is going to go because John Boehner had been talking about negotiating that. And he'd actually been talking about setting it up in terms of not doing just a clean debt limit increase. So it'd be interesting to see if Boehner can get that done before he goes. He's not going to be able, of course, to walk it up right up against the deadline because the way this would work is next Wednesday would be the conference election and the floor vote is scheduled for the day after, which has the advantage of getting him sworn in before like a big backlash can build. You know, there are some people who don't like Paul Ryan because of his immigration views. They're not going to have as much time to put pressure on lawmakers to stage a floor revolt. So, but that does mean then that he comes in just a couple days before the debt limit deadline.
I know a couple of members were not very happy about his insistence that no one move to vacate the chair while he was speaker. Apparently that, I don't know if that binds everyone if they don't vote for him for speaker, but looks like he's largely succeeded in getting what he wants on that.
Well, the rule change that might happen there is, you know, and people are split around that. The conversation has moved a bit where it's possible that they simply make sure that you can't offer a privileged motion there. So there are, you know, two kinds of motions in this case. And one is just a standard motion, and you've got to ask, you know, for rules committee or the speaker to let your bill get a vote. And then there are privileged motions where you can force a vote. And the last time that was done, it was actually the speaker, I believe it was, who forced a vote. He offered a privileged motion on himself as a show of strength to make the point. There are people who are split about whether they need to keep that power, even in the Freedom Caucus. On the one hand, the motion that was offered against Boehner earlier this year was not a privileged motion, and it still resulted in his departure. So some folks say that's good enough, because once Boehner didn't put the bill on the floor, it was a show of weakness. On the other hand, there are other folks who said you need the privileged motion because that's the one that forces people to have to go on record, and Boehner left because people told him they didn't want to have to walk the plank. They support him in private, but his private support was higher than his public support. That's still kind of TBD. I sort of think that it wasn't even the main issue, though, that this is more about both liking Dan Webster and some personal stuff between certain HFC members and Ryan and retribution.
That was another big issue that they were talking about, is making sure that there's not punishment for votes that go against the leadership from members of the conference. So very interesting. Perhaps the craziness is coming to a close. Perhaps it's just ramping up, depending on everything that unfolds in the coming days and how Ryan performs as speaker. So, Joel, thanks so much for filling in for Jim for a couple of days. We'll talk to you later.
Hey, thank you.
Joel Gerke of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back on Friday. Join us then for the next 3 Martini Lunch.